But it's great to be together and have us all gathered together this morning. I encourage you to open your book to James. I want to continue our study there and look at some lessons as we continue to go through the book of James. And I used a springboard, if you will, the idea of God is righteous and loves righteousness as we entered into this series. And to me, I'm trying to make it all fit together, and I think it fits well. When we think about righteousness, and God loves righteousness, and His eyes are over the righteous. I took that first slide out for you this time, but that's kind of where we're proceeding for this thought. Today, I want to talk about godly wisdom. We almost got into it in our Bible class this morning. I may tie that back in a little bit here. We talked about James 3 this morning, Bible class, a little bit, and there's a good lesson there. But one of the things in James chapter 3, it's the context there, and I believe it actually continues into chapter 4, is talking about the early Christians who were still Jews. Remember, as we look at the book of James, it's the 12 tribes scattered in James 1. And so James is addressing basically the Jewish convert. The Jewish convert, and these were very Jewish people. And I've, at least in my study and my lessons, I try to tie that back into who the audience was. And that helps us apply the lessons as well, I think. It certainly was who the letter was written to, and as best we can discern those things, it's beneficial to us. Well, in James 3, he talks about godly wisdom. He talks wisdom in general, actually. Knowledge and wisdom and virtues come into play here. And as we read this morning and start in verse 13, we're going to break down to the end of this, I'm going to call a paragraph, although it may not be the end, but it's going to be the end for our sermon this morning anyways, okay? So we're talking about godly wisdom. And in the world, we seek wisdom. We've always sought wisdom. And I think when our mind, we think about wisdom, who do we think of? King Solomon. And I use the word supernatural, God gave you wisdom, right? He come from God. It was not of his own acquiring. He didn't gain it by study and learning. He was given it by God. But we also realize that Greek philosophers. I was not a student of literature. I've mentioned many times I'm not a reader. I'm not a recreational reader. And some of you may have read some of their works, but just if you believe Wikipedia on the internet, this is where sometimes I grab stuff from that from a secular perspective. From about 500 BC through the Middle Ages, the Greek philosophers were popular. Why? The wisdom. They wanted to, what's the answers to life? And certainly, for the most part, that was making sense out of life absent from the true God, because we have God's mind revealed, which is the true wisdom, isn't it? And so we have Greek philosophers. And even today, we want wisdom. We want to be wise. And in the Scripture, often the contrast to wisdom is foolishness or unwise, bad decisions. And we're going to talk about that because James gives us a good study of godly wisdom. And I have here, the sum of my lesson is, godly wisdom, true wisdom, is the marriage of knowledge and godliness. It's the marriage of knowledge and godliness. And sometimes maybe we don't always think of it that way, but we're going to take a look at how James teaches this, and maybe some other passages. So first of all, manifesting wisdom, because that's what James is going to do for us. He's going to manifest what wisdom looks like. How about Solomon? What did his wisdom look like? He had it. Did he live it? He wrote about it. As we look, and I think everybody recognizes this. You remember in 1 Kings chapter 11, 1 through 4. Remember what it says there? Solomon's heart was drawn away to serve idols. Wait a minute. I thought he was a wise man. What happened to his wisdom? He had it. Did he know better? Scripture shows us he knows better. He knew better. He didn't manifest that way. Now, not in whole. In the whole, 1 Kings 11, 4. Now, and if you're on your outlines there, if that passage, I forgot. I copied 3, 6 through 6, 13. It's actually 11, 1 through 4, if you have those outlines. Solomon had the wisdom. But what did he do? He chose to do different, didn't he? He chose to do different. He followed after women who led him to worshiping of idols. And so we see Solomon did not manifest godly wisdom. He taught it. He wrote it. He knew it. He didn't live it. And so we do not see Solomon put it to work. And so, as I noted, godly wisdom, the marriage of knowledge and virtues. Solomon lacked a virtue. He lacked a virtue, and then he followed after idolatry. And so, this is also hinted, it's actually taught in 1 Peter. In my Bible, that is 2 Peter, not 1 Peter. In 2 Peter 1, it's one of the add-alongs, I call it. I've done this a lot here now, but the multiple dimensions of religion, in this case of wisdom. Sometimes we think one-dimensionally of religion. We think of knowledge. Because we got to get people baptized. We got to teach about Jesus. We got to teach them about the resurrection. But that's not all religion's about, is it? That's not pure and genuine religion. We've stopped. We've not gone far enough. And 1 Peter, like James here, is going to marry knowledge to virtues. In the add-alongs, in 2 Peter, starting at verse 5, be diligent to add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, knowledge temperance, temperance patience. And so there was our knowledge. Add to our faith. In verse 5, add to our faith virtue and to virtue knowledge. So those are the intellectual piece of it. But notice he continues with the virtue parts of it, the godliness parts of it. To knowledge, add temperance. To temperance, patience or endurance. And to endurance, godliness. And to godliness, brotherly kindness. And brotherly kindness, love. And so it's the marriage of those. And notice, I emphasize this in 2 Peter. In verse 9, he says, he that lacks these things is what? Blind. He's not knowing. He's not understanding. He's veiled. Interesting thought for you. Take home with you. How do you get temperance with veiled knowledge? This list, in my mind, is a self-perpetuating. The more knowledge, the more virtuous you become in godliness, the more apparent and the more wise you become, the more knowledgeable you become, and it's a continuous cycle of life in my mind. Because it's not just we do it and we're done. It seems like it's going to perpetuate. But without those virtues, there's a veil, it's called. A blindness, as it's called. And we see that there in that passage. So expounding upon that idea and that concept, James gets to the heart of the matter. He gets to the heart of the matter. What is true knowledge? What is true wisdom? And in particular, he's actually talking about wisdom, the true wisdom. And the true wisdom, he identifies heart matters. Because this be realistic, right? We can all go open a book and learn something. But we don't necessarily apply it, do we? We can learn it, we can know it, but we don't necessarily apply it, we don't necessarily live it. James gets to the heart of the matter. It's not just about knowledge, it's about virtues. It's the marriage of knowledge and virtues. So in verse 13 through 18, he starts out with the term, and it's a little bit of a unique term for an English language. It doesn't fit together very well. The idea of meekness and wisdom. Notice what he said in verse 13. Who is the wise man and endued with knowledge? Let him show out of good conversation, let him show out of his works or his life with meekness of wisdom. That's an odd companion, meekness of wisdom. This is a very busy slide, but bear with me. And I still scratch my head on this one, and if you've got notes, you can take it home and look over it some more. Meekness is the attribute of wisdom. Meekness belongs to wisdom and proceeds from it. So its integral part of being wise is being meek. They're integral. They cannot be separated. And like I said, this is a really hard term for me to rationalize because of the wording on it. And also another, so that's one commentator, Schaeff. Another one, J.W. Roberts, I put down. Just talking about, first of all, meekness means gentleness, humility, courtesy, consideration towards other. And it's the opposite, meekness is the opposite of a rough, egotistical, unyielding attitude. That's what J.W. Roberts calls meekness. So the meekness of wisdom is the meekness that belongs to wisdom and proceeds from it. I highlighted a lot of that stuff. And so the wise person is the one that shows meekness, that displays meekness. It belongs to the wise man. He has meekness and he displays meekness. That is the wise man. And so we and to carry along with the other definition of meekness we had there, it's the strong who is yielding. A strong person who is yielding. And that was the core value of Jesus, wasn't it? Jesus was our God, walked on this earth, but he was meek. He could do anything he wanted to because he was God, as God. But he was meek and gentle and lowly in heart, it says in Matthew 11 there. It's a core Christian value, critical for godly wisdom. James starts this out. What does godly wisdom look like? Meekness of wisdom is what it looks like. Critical, this is where we're tying into a previous lesson. It ties into the listener, wasn't it? One of the attributes of a listener being meek. What was the opposite of the meek listener? One who would speak back, would act out in wrath. That's the not meek listener. So one who is not wise, who is not meek, would not respond that way. So the wisdom, godly wisdom, is meek. And that is demonstrated. Godly wisdom is demonstrated. And sometimes, I want to encourage you in life, and this is one of my applications, you have a little bit ahead. You ever wonder why you're doing and doing and doing, but you still or just feel like you're missing something? Stuff is still wrong. Stuff just don't feel right. I want things to change, but I can't get them to change. Sometimes we lack the godly wisdom aspect of this. We have the knowledge like Solomon, but we don't have to put it in the practice piece of it. These virtues demonstrated here, notice verse 17. How is godly wisdom demonstrated? These are things we want. I'm going to jump down to 17. We're going to come back and pick up the other verses there. The wisdom that is from God, which is above, is first pure. Pure. Pure is the root word, actually, to holiness. So it's uncontaminated. It's innocent. It's pure of fault. It's also peaceable. Godly wisdom is peaceable, or one who is shown out by loving peace. And it's going to be peaceable. It's going to be contrasted with another group we're going to look at here in a moment. And so we'll talk about that then. It's also gentle. Godly wisdom is gentle. And this, don't all these kind of fit together with meekness too? And maybe this is a way to define meekness. But regardless, if you look at it from that way or not, the eye of gentleness. Even making allowances for others, being lenient, mild, inoffensive, not violent, harsh, relentless, friendly, good, full of goodwill towards others. Gentle. Godly wisdom is gentle. Easily entreated. Is someone who is approachable. Is not a stiff, stern, or obstinate, unyielding man. These are quotes I'm taking from commentators that I studied on this. Not obstinate or unyielding. That's definitely not an attribute of a meek person, is it? Who's obstinate, unyielding. That was Albert Barnes. He also ties it into James chapter 1 we just spoke about. In verse 16, about listening, the meek person, or the one who is easily entreated, is ready to yield when truth requires him to do it, who is willing to sacrifice own convenience for the good of others. Easily entreated, easily approached, is meek when you approach, not lashing out like James 1 talked about, not responding in anger like John 1 talked about, but receives meekly the word. Easily entreated. Oh, forgot to put the little bulb up there. Full of mercy. One who uses mercy. In other words, not returning tit for tat. In other words, not giving what is deserved, but being merciful with withholding what is deserved is the idea of mercy. Then full of good fruits. That's just the results of that work. It's going to be the opposite of the other group we're going to talk about. The one whose virtues are demonstrated in are full of good fruits because it's godly wisdom. It produces God's fruit. It produces fruits of righteousness. It is unbiased and it is sincere. And bias is possibly without, maybe unbiased, maybe right, or it may be without strife. There was a differentiation. The commentators weren't consistent on that word. It was a harder word to translate, but either way, it's also sincere. Godly wisdom demonstrated shows insincerity. It is righteousness produces from the seed of peace and sown by peacemakers. And that's one of what he's saying in verse 18 of James 3. The fruit or the product of righteousness is sown in peace, sown from seed of peace, with them that are peacemakers. And that, again, that's one of those passages that the wording in English is a little hard for me to comprehend what he's trying to say. I just got the International Standard Version. A harvest of righteousness is grown from the seed of peace and planted by peacemakers. That's International Standard. American Standard was similarly helped, and some of your versions might help as well. Notice again, the theme here is the idea of meekness keeps coming out of this, doesn't it? The idea of meekness is embedded in all these concepts that we just talked about in verse 17 and 18. It's meekness on display. Meekness on display. That is godly wisdom. What is the opposite of that? James deals with the opposite. He deals with the idea of carnal wisdom or worldly wisdom, a wisdom that is not of God. And he also identifies that. And so let's back up to verse 14 through 16. Notice what carnal wisdom looks like. Carnal wisdom is a condition from the condition of the heart. It has, in verse 14, bitter envy and strife in the heart. Envy, jealousy, and a misplaced zeal. That's the condition of carnal wisdom. And then strife, the idea of contention. Even so much so as the pushing forward for personal ends. It's a selfish ambition piece of it. The strife is associated with strife, as commentators talk about it. And he says, and if you look, there's some tie-ins as well to 1 Corinthians 1 through 4. Not only does Peter talk about how virtuous godly living is not just about knowledge, it's about virtues. And being blinded there, we see an example in the 1 Corinthians letter. If you read first four chapters of 1 Corinthians, well, you read the whole book of 1 Corinthians, you see envy and strife at work. Well, James is dealing with the same thing here. Carnal wisdom looks like this. It's envious, jealousy. It's strife, it's contention, it's putting oneself forward, a misplaced zeal, and it breeds strife. He says, don't be boastful. Don't boast about this and don't be deceived. Your wisdom is not of God. It is sensual, earthly, sensual, and devilish, as he calls out there. This type of wisdom is, and basically without getting in, I don't know that those individual words were meant for any particular reason, but to the Jew, it's everything they would abhor. This is not of God. This carnal wisdom is not of God. It's of the carnal and flesh, and we see those two. I mentioned 1 Corinthians 1 through 4 because Paul actually references the idea of carnality there and about earthly wisdom and about, in their case, he showed them being youthful. Those are the sources or result of carnal wisdom. And there's deceitfulness. There's deceitful wisdom. It's not true wisdom. It's blinded, and he even talks about that in the Corinthian letter, and we won't go there. If you're on personal studies, you're welcome to look at that and compare this chapter of James to what was going on in the Corinthian letter. But there are some great parallels there. Because, you know, man has always looked for wisdom, haven't they? Man has always had this drive and ambition to have wisdom. But we want godly wisdom, don't we? We want godly wisdom. How does this carnal wisdom manifest it? Well, it's not just in the heart. It's exposed of envy and jealousy, envy and strife again. And what comes with it? Confusion in every evil work versus the work of God. It's an evil work, a work of righteousness that produces good fruit. It produces evil fruit. And I forgot to mention this. The godly wisdom had peace, right? It's sown in peace by peacemakers. Envy and strife is the opposite of that peace, isn't it? This carnal wisdom is manifested by envy and strife. It produces confusion as well, and evil work, every evil work. And again, we look at the Corinthian letter and we see some very, very similar parallels there. So what about, how does this apply to us? What does it matter to us? Does it help us? I'm going to say absolutely it does. We all want godly wisdom. We don't want the Solomon wisdom. Well, maybe we would like Solomon wisdom. Huh. I would like to be that wise, right? Like to have that knowledge. But what did Solomon lack? He didn't use it. He was still lacking, even though he had knowledge. It didn't get him there, did it? He come up short. In Solomon's case, in the scripture, it didn't talk about Solomon's wisdom and lacking these virtues. But James says so. James says godly wisdom has these virtues. It's rooted in meekness. It's a quality we should all strive for if we don't already have a good measure of it. It's the idea of knowledge married up with godliness or with virtues. They go together. Peter showed them inseparable. And James shows them inseparable. The First Corinthian letter shows results of ungodly wisdom or carnal wisdom. Godly wisdom produces fruit of righteousness, and is sown in peace by peacemakers, as we made the point. And so if we have this and seek for this godly wisdom, it will be effective in our life. It will produce results in our life. Let's take Solomon for an example. Did he know that it was not good to worship an idol? Did he know it was not good to have all these wives that are drawing him away from God? I look back now as an adult and say, you know what? Solomon had a problem. Solomon had an addiction. In our world standards, you look at Solomon, his life, he was addicted. He had an addiction. He did not change his life. He wallowed in that and lived in that. And left that in his life. We have to remove those things. And these godly virtues, the virtue of meekness, of peace, and love, and all these other virtues are so critical. And one thing I plan on doing this coming year is to go through and talk about some of these virtues that help us be more directed towards godly wisdom and away from the worldly wisdom. Because if we look at ourselves and look at our lives, do our lives look like that list of godly wisdom? The peace and the virtues associated with it, or our lives full with envy and strife. That kind of helps us understand where we're at. And also helps us know where to look. Do I look over here? Do I look over there? What can I do to help get out of this and change this situation I'm in? God's given the answer. And so we'll spend more time enumerating those things and developing those things. And my plan is to use the Galatians 5 and the works of the flesh and the fruit of the Spirit. Those fit with these two categories of godly wisdom and earthly wisdom. There's different terms used, but it is of godliness, and it will help us, I believe, in these things. And looking forward to be able to present those lessons and encouraging those matters. Carnal side of things. We've got envy in my life. Is there strife and contention in my life? Work on the godly attributes. Put out the worldly attributes, the carnal, and bring in the good. And we'll, like I said, we'll explore those as we talk in the future. We're several weeks away, but we're going to get there. About the fruit of the Spirit and the works of the flesh. We will expound upon those. I found them personally very enlightening to our lives, to help us to live a life of joy and peace, and of love, meekness, and all those good attributes we find there. Well, I didn't want to study this without leaving the context, because I really want to focus on wisdom and godly wisdom. Because godly wisdom is what's going to help us. It's going to help me and help you. Knowing what godly wisdom is, knowing what worldly wisdom is, that's what helps us. But this was written to the Jew. And a lot of times I start with this as far as the context goes. This time I decided to put it in the back. What was a Jew? The Jew was obsessed with ambition. When we talked about Matthew 6, they did works to be seen of men. Look how great I am. I'm giving my money to the poor. Look at me. I'm fasting. Look at me fast. Look how righteous I am. Look at me pray on the street corner. That's a sin of ambition, of preeminence, of prominence. They had this selfish ambition in their life. It was who the Jew was. It's who the Jew this letter was written to. Selfish ambition. The Pharisees, what do they like? They love titles and sitting in foremost rooms and in high places and being praised. That was the Pharisee. And quite frankly, Matthew 6 is a Pharisee also, most likely. The reality is that cancer in that society was perforated the whole society. Now, maybe everybody wasn't affected, but it was It was a factor that was obvious when you looked at the Jew. We've talked about this a few times. The apostle, who is greatest? Selfish ambition, the opposite of meekness. This is who James was writing. I'm fixing to tie this in, by the way. Bear with me a second. James and John desired to sit at the right hand and left hand of Jesus. Remember what happened? The other 10, there was contention between them. There was strife between them. Why? Because they decided they wanted to be, they had ambition. They had a selfish ambition. And then John 9 ties in as well. We studied this one. We don't have to turn there. If you got notes, you go back and read these. I would encourage you to do that. The Pharisees condemned the blind man and said, "You were born in sin. Why do you teach us?" They weren't me. They put themselves on the pedestal. Why do I say all these things? Because James 3:1 tells us the context here. The context here is a warning for those who were full of self-ambition. James 3, verse 1. "My brethren, be not many." The King James says masters. The idea is the idea of teachers. "Be not many teachers." Why? Stop. And the commentator says, stop becoming so many teachers. Why? Because you don't have godly wisdom. You're not manifesting godly wisdom. You're manifesting carnal wisdom. You're manifesting strife and contention. James says, stop it. Don't do that no more. Quit becoming so many teachers. It's a sin of the same of the Pharisees and the apostles of ambition, of selfish ambition, of not of meekness, not of servitude. I bring these up because of the apostles. They too did not understand the idea of servitude. They didn't understand the idea that they were to be servants, not masters. The chapter here, 3 here, is about the early Jew convert. Don't be so many of you become teachers. Stop becoming so many teachers. Why? Because you're not qualified. Carnal wisdom was one example. As I'm tying in this morning in Bible class, we talked about the tongue and the sins of the tongue. It fits perfectly into that context. Before he dealt with the godly and ungodly wisdom, because obviously a teacher, right? You want a teacher who's wise, who's knowledgeable. So James explains the knowledgeable or the wisdom aspect of it, carnal and spiritual wisdom. But he also, before that we skipped, talks about the tongue. The tongue can no man change. And in my Bible, I write my Bible. I don't know if you do, but it helps me to keep context together. A tongue is trainable. He says in verse 2, "For in many things we offend all," in James 3, verse 2, "in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a complete man and able to bridle the whole body. But he who is not a complete man, he that is full of carnal wisdom, is not qualified to teach." As a matter of fact, the person is so damaging in the kingdom, and here talking about the tongue, it talks about setting on fire the world. In verse 6, "The tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity." And you know how fire, we have sagegrass back home. I think we have sagegrass here. That stuff lights like gasoline does. You get a fire started, it will go and spread, and you can't stop it. A tongue whose heart is not right will be that way. So when we have the ranting or the railing and the inappropriate matters of teaching the gospel, James says, stop. You're not qualified. You're worldly. You're carnal. Look, you produced strife and contention. Versus the meek, who promoted peace and the attributes associated with that. So our application for us, don't be a Solomon. Have the wisdom, but he had great wisdom but lacked. He did not work. He didn't act upon that wisdom. Seek godly wisdom. Wisdom's meekness, spiritual maturity. Purge the carnal out of our lives, and we will develop that some more as we go. Acquired knowledge is lacking. It's not the only thing that we need. It will not get us through the gates of heaven. We want to work on that and continue to develop these godly virtues. James has showed us we are lacking only one of those virtues, or one of those aspects in 1 Peter, is is knowledge. The rest of them are to be developed. You want godly wisdom? You want wisdom to live right? It may be, as I mentioned earlier, that as we live, we know we want to do better things, but sometimes we keep coming up short. I know this, and I know that, and I've been baptized, and I know I'm supposed to do this, but sometimes our heart just isn't in the right place. And that's one of the points James makes there. Our heart's not in the right place. It's not going to produce the right results. Godly wisdom will help us with that. Godly wisdom. He says, is peaceable, or is pure. Godly wisdom, an attribute we want to acquire and develop in our lives. The wisdom be pure, be peaceable, gentle. This is how godly wisdom is manifested. Easy to be approached, full of mercy and good fruits. Is not partial, does not cause strife, and is sincere. And it makes peace, is sown in peace, and it makes peace. Do you wish to have peace from God? If you be baptized this morning, you can have peace from the sins of your past life. You can wash those away and be right with God. If you've already done that and you're looking for that peace in life, you're looking for that godly wisdom, and maybe you've not been the example that you need to be in the world, and it's something of a public nature that you wish to make public and ask the prayers of. We encourage you to do that as well. If you're subject to our gospel's call, won't you come while we stand, while we sing?